This is the Pitch Vision Academy Cricket Show, Series 5, Episode 35, Indian Bullseye. Coming up on this week's Pitch Vision Academy Cricket Show, Indian Bullseye, what's that about? Well, you're going to have to listen all the way through to the end to find out about that one. Meanwhile, in the world of cricket, we talk about two-day games for club cricketers. We find out about a player with a slingy action and a problem with his coach, and we help someone come back from injury. All that and more coming up on this week's Pitch Vision Academy Cricket Show. Welcome to the Pitch Vision Academy Cricket Show. This is your guide to coaching or playing better cricket. If you want to improve your game, you're in exactly the right place. We've got 30 minutes of audio goodness for you. My name's David Hinchliffe. I run things here. But the men with the information, with the big plan, and the ways to help you get better, join me on the line. First of all, it's Mark Garraway. He is the Director of Cricket Coaching at Mealfield School. Hello, Garris.
Hello, how are you?
I'm very good. I've got a new pair of headphones, so I'm very excited about that. That's my excitement for this week. And you are back in school.
I am back in school, yes. Yeah, we're all going. The sun's shining as it is most places in the British Isles at the moment, and it's looking resplendent out there. It's just a shame that we've got no cricket until April.
Yeah, that is a bit of a shame. But that's one of your bugbears, isn't it, that the season ends far too soon?
I've never quite got that. You know, surely we should use September like everybody else does. But I understand the way that school sports goes, and it goes to winter sports in September. But I'm looking out here at the moment and just thinking, what a complete and utter waste, where we were all freezing various bits of our anatomy off in April and getting wet.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, well, I thought something similar. I went up to my cricket club yesterday to pick up a couple of bits that I'd left in there at the end of the season, and it had been transformed. It's a multi-purpose facility, and it had been transformed from cricket into football. And I thought it was a bit sad to see such a beautiful day as it was yesterday and to see football pitches there. Surely football pitches should be wet and muddy and cold.
Yeah.
Also joining me on the line, it's the cricket professional at Portsmouth Grammar School. It's Sam Lavery. Hello, Lavers.
Hello.
And you're also back in school.
I'm back in school. I'm in school currently. I can see out over the quad, and there are a variety of ball games going on, which look rather interesting. So all going very well, but another day of gorgeous sunshine that's being wasted, as you said.
Well, let's not dwell too much on that. Let's talk about something which happened since we last spoke, which is, Gareth, your article on two-day cricket as a way of helping develop players in a slightly different way. And I thought that was a very interesting article, and we had some discussion about it on the site, and I'll put a link to that in the show notes for anyone who's listening and wants to get a little bit more information about that. But I wanted to ask you a little bit more about it, because I found it quite interesting, especially your point of saying, you know, let's do something different. There is time in this season to do it if you get rid of a couple of the one-day games. So what's the basic overview of what you were arguing in your article?
Well, my argument is around various different things, really. You know, we've got some great formats, which is 50 over or 40 over, depending on the time scale that you play to, and then 2020. But equally, the greatest format for us, and particularly around the development of character and concentration and maybe some of the non-technical sides of things, as well as being able to bat long with a good technique and be able to bowl for long spells, it is the longer format. And I'm really keen to get people out there and play this. And I've taken a U-turn on this as well, to be honest, because I can remember when I first went over to Ireland, and Ireland were predominantly playing in 50-over cricket and 2020 cricket, because those were the two World Cups that they could go. And one of the school's setups in the north would play a two-day game of cricket every year, and I sort of poo-pooed it until I went along and watched that game, and it was fantastic to see the ebb and flow of that game, to see people making different kind of decisions other than the ones that you get in a fairly bog-standard planned 50-over and 20-over game, where things pretty much happen by the book. You sort of know exactly where you're going. All of a sudden, You had one team in the lead after the first innings, and then the other team decided, right, the only way that we're going to get a positive outcome here is if we play really positively, smack it around in the third innings, and then try and bowl the opposition out. And as it is, it ended up in a winning draw for the side that was winning after first innings, but they were nine down at the end. There were men around the bat. There were bowlers bowling with a different skill set, a different sets of fields, adapting. You had batters sort of celebrating dot balls because they were just sticking in there and finding a way to not lose that 10th wicket. And it was absolutely brilliant cricket. And when I look back on that, it completely changed my view on the way that we should be going about it. So my point in this whole article was to give it a go, really. And I saw your comment, David, which was, why only one? Well, I think the reason initially why only one is that a lot of people haven't done this and they would need to experience it for the first time. And for the clubs, say, in England, why can't you organise one in September with all this glorious weather around? Let's have a two-day game between two local clubs, give it a go, then have the winter to review its effectiveness and how you want to develop it. And then, yes, maybe you can play two or three games in the following year. But it just provides a different stimulus, a different set of challenges, and in particular around leadership development, which I think, you know, in this game of 50-over cricket where the coach can set your plans and you pretty much go out there and you play the game off this set of paper, all of a sudden you get chucked into two-day cricket and the things move a lot quicker and then occasionally slow down and all of a sudden there's this explosion of something happening or the need for something to happen from a captaincy and leadership point of view that is bereft often within our 2020 and 50-over cricket.
I think my comment was, although I was broadly agreeing with you, I think my comment was born of the idea of playing a little bit of devil's advocate and saying where there isn't a tradition of two-day cricket, like there is, say, in Australia, where two-day cricket is the norm at the club level, is one going to be enough? But I like your argument of saying, well, you know, let's start with one and go from there. That kind of makes some sense, doesn't it?
I think it's really difficult. Having been in lots of meetings when I was a development officer, trying to convince clubs that this is the right way to go. I think it's very difficult to come in and just go, look, you know, we're going to do three, because you'd often get a lot of opposition because people would be discussing things that they wouldn't necessarily have experienced themselves. And one of the virtues of giving somebody a taste is that then they pick up a little bit of experience and you'll find out whether they're hooked a little bit by it and they're interested in taking it forward or whether they're not. And I that would always be my approach towards it, rather than trying to sort of put the views of myself or the people that were trying to make a change across. And as I say, taking myself back a step, I remember having a good discussion with a guy called Chris Hart, top man from Northern Ireland, from the region, who was telling me that I was completely wrong because I was going down a 50-over, 20-over way of developing cricketers. And he was completely right in the end, but I had to experience it to be able to change my view.
Lavers, what do you think from a practical point of view in terms of two-day cricket? Can you see it being implemented in the kind of teams that you work with?
Yeah, I think it could do, and I think some of the grounds, like yours, as you alluded to earlier on, are multi-purpose facilities. But given that if we're trying to get 10 teams in every Premier League to play a two-day game, we only need 5 grounds. So I'm sure 50% of the grounds are cricket-specific. So I think logistically, I don't think it would be too difficult. As with anything, there'll be a bit of resistance to it from various people, whether it's a case of just not wanting change or a bit of laziness that they don't want to do the extra work that's involved in setting up an extra fixture. I'm not sure what that would be. And I guess it's one of those things that you put it out there and you see what feedback comes back. And there could be a million reasons not to do it. But at the moment, I think why not? It's going to add to the thinking processes that cricketers go through and challenge the way they approach their game. It's going to, I think one thing it does do is it generally enhances technique, because people are forced to bat for longer periods of time. People are forced to develop their concentration skills as batters and as bowlers and as fielders. So there are lots and lots of benefits to it. And if it's implemented in the right way, so in the right scale, which might be one game but might become 3 or 4 games ultimately, then I think there's loads of benefits that we can get from it.
Yeah, I think there's little doubt that in most cases it can be done. I think as Australian cricket shows, it can certainly be done. And I know in certain parts of India, club cricket is played over 3 days sometimes. So it can certainly be done. But I guess it depends then how it's approached by the people in the power to make that kind of a change. If people want to look at it as well, we've always done it this way and there's nothing wrong with the way that we do it now, then that change is never going to happen. But if the powers that be look at it and go, well, how can we better develop cricketers who are more prepared for first-class cricket, especially at a Premier League level where, you know, you're only one step below, then that's going to make all the difference, isn't it? And the approach to change is the key thing there.
Yeah, I think also, if you think about it from kind of the perspective that myself and Gareth are largely involved at the moment in terms of school cricket and school cricketers, if there are 10 local Premier League clubs and two of them decide to get a two-day game on, and maybe another two, so there are four teams playing a couple of two-day games every year, and the other six aren't. I know that from a parent's perspective, and also from a coach's perspective, if they're seeking advice and saying, "Oh, which club do I go and play for in the Premier League as I'm a developing cricketer?" Well, if there's one club that is clearly forward-thinking, is clearly offering different forms of cricket and different opportunities, then they're automatically going to jump out at any parent who's looking to place their club in a strong, developing, open-minded, forward-thinking club.
And what's interesting in Australia, of course, which is starting in the opposite direction, really, is, you know, a lot of top-level club cricket is played over 2 days. They're going the other way a little bit, and they're playing more limited over cricket in a day, 2020 cricket in a day, and it's all going into one sort of champion side who tries to win everything in all the different formats. So it's interesting that in Australia they have cut. It's almost the opposite problem. You know, they want to do less 2 day cricket to be able to get more of that limited over and 2020 stuff in.
Yeah, and I think what they're doing over there is they're trying to reflect the world formats, aren't they? By doing bits of it all, really, as opposed to putting their eggs in one basket. And I think
makes sense.
My idea is to do something similar over here, and but do it in small steps. So, you know, if I'm a 15 or 14 year old lad and I'm somebody who maybe isn't particularly big and strong as a batter and don't always get to show my full set of tricks in the 2020 game or a 50 over game because of my stature, the 2 day game might be an opportunity for me to stand above the others. So I think it's good in terms of talent identification. I think it's good to replicate the types of cricket that we do see on telly, because we see 50 over cricket now, and we see lots of 2020, and we also see a lot of test matches. So we could be missing out on talent identification unless we put in a longer format, because you know, somebody might not be particularly natural, particularly at a young age, to hitting the ball out of the park, but somebody might take to this, and then all of a sudden that's their route into the professional game or through academies or whatever the case may be. So I think it's something that we do need to look at, and it's something that I know that Australia have done for years and are coming off it a little bit to make sure that they're covering all of the formats, and we should do the same.
Okay, let's wrap this section up with the yes-no round, three questions that we can only answer yes or no to, no matter how much more that the team want to say. I've got the questions, so let's fire away. First question, talent is specific to format.
No.
No.
Second question, every bowler will average one bad ball and over.
No.
No, some do more than that.
That's cheating.
Sorry.
Third question. Cricket is all about angles.
Yes.
Yes.
Okay, let's roll ourselves into the mailbag, dig around in there and pick out a couple of questions. Now, the best question of the week that is picked out wins a prize, which is, of course, an online coaching course courtesy of Pitch Vision Academy at pitchvision.com. You can send your questions into us via coach@pitchvision.com. And there's a couple of people who have already done that this week, and we're going to decide on a winner a bit later on in the show. The first question is from Anaf. And Anaf says, I'm a right-arm bowler. I play for my school team, and I open the bowling. My coach and my teammates say that I bowl with a slingy action, and I'm not bowling properly, and I will be dropped from the school team. What should I do? How should I get a perfect bowling action and bowl with pace?
Oh, well, I'll have a go first. Now, and I'm going to be fairly, I suppose, blunt on this, really. And first question would be to ask a question back. Is it, how effective is your action that you've presently got? Because if it is effective and it's just an aesthetic thing that's putting the coach or whoever the selectors are off, then it doesn't take a lot of watching of television to realise that this bloke Malinga's doing fairly well for himself, and he's the best 2020 bowler in the world, and he's making a pretty good career out of him. And and the second thing I would say is, if there's a good level of competence with the action that you've got presently, is there anything that you can do by watching him, or even watching some archive footage of somebody like a Jeff Thompson, to see if there's anything that you can learn in terms of skill set? So obviously with the Malinga stuff, he's developed a fantastic bouncer, a fantastic slower ball bouncer, where he bowls with an off-cutter action, a great slower ball with his off-cutter action, which lends itself to a lower arm, and obviously has become the best bowler of all time with the Orcas. So are there things that you can develop within your present action which will allow you to be even more effective? And I would just say, if you're doing a good job and if you're meriting a place statistically in the side, I would challenge the coach back in a very, very polite fashion and say that, well, this is my action. Malinga's doing a great job in world cricket. There have been many others that have also done that over the years, most notably in the 70s of Jeff Thompson. And what I'd like, rather than being threatened not to play, is to see what you can do to help me to develop these different skills around Yorkers and slower ball bouncers and so on and so forth.
Yeah, if he's put it into the side netting, then all bets are off. But if he's a decent bowler, that's going to that's an interesting approach taken by the coach there. I know we've only got one side of the story. Yeah, exactly. But it'd be interesting to find out the coach's view of that, wouldn't it, Lavis?
Yeah, absolutely. I think communication between coach and whether it's pupil in this case or cricketer is always key. And it may be that the coach has said something that maybe has been interpreted in the wrong way. However, in any circumstance like this, when you've got something that's slightly different in what they do, judge them on their outcomes. If their outcomes are strong and they're generating good pace, or they're bowling the right areas, regardless of how they're getting it down there, if they're contributing effectively to the team, then there's no reason why you shouldn't keep them going. I think sometimes you see coaches who like to change cricketers, maybe because they don't understand what the player's doing, they don't understand the action. So you might get the odd slingy bowler or the odd bowler who bowls with a slightly bent arm and a Muralitharan style action, and sometimes people don't understand it, so they don't like to work with it because they're a little bit scared of what to do. But I think if the outcomes are good, then it's a case of learning with the cricketer as they go, and being quite honest and saying, I maybe don't understand how we can achieve these other things, but let's go and try and find out, and let's try and learn a little bit about it.
It does also beg the question, is what really is a slinging action? I did think about this once, and are there that many differences between what you would class as an orthodox action or a traditional action and a slinging action? I mean, a greater separation between the hips and the shoulders, perhaps? But are there any other common traits to a slingy type bowler than a non-slingy type bowler?
I don't know. I think there's often a slight delay in the action in the release, isn't there? So a delay between landing and release point. Mm. There's often that slightly lower arm, and as you say, there's that separation between lower or mid body and upper body. So there are a few different factors, but it's a difficult one. It's probably not something that's been defined clearly, and it's a word that gets used an awful lot, isn't it? So maybe something that you can pinpoint, David, and you can get into the cricketing dictionary.
Yeah, it's an interesting one because I know that our chief executive Richard Welch has often spoken to me about why the slinging action isn't the action that's coached right from the start, because it's very effective. And that, at the time, I remember talking about it, thinking, well, what is actually the difference between a slingy style of action and a traditional style of action? And the only thing really at the time I could come up with was that you kind of a little bit more flexible in your upper back, and you have a bit more of a separation between the hips and the shoulders, and that causes that delay that you talked about, Lavers, and that makes it look like a sling.
Well, I agree. I mean, the delayed bowling arm is something that is talked about not just with this action, but a normal action type as well, because it's that catapult type principle where all the energy is stored in the bottom half of the body. The body, the legs and the feet cling to the ground and then transfer that momentum up. And the later we can use that energy, the more the slingshot approach comes into play, and the greater the pace that is delivered. And, you know, if you think about a catapult being held back and all that energy that's being stored, and then it's let go, and the boulder goes quite a distance at a good rate of knots. And that's exactly the same as a Malinga or Jeff Thompson, who was probably the best exponent of that. If you look at somebody like Strobaktar, there was an element of that in him as well. Certainly a delayed bowling arm, that is for sure. And that's the biggest difference that I see with a slingy action. The biggest benefit to me is the fact that you naturally are setting up your bowling arm to come over later, and as a result it will have more energy, more explosive energy to use and let go of the ball at a good rate or not. So there's definite benefits, and I'm with Richard a bit on this. But it has to be natural, doesn't it? You know, I don't think you're going to coach somebody to do it particularly. But if you get somebody who comes along and naturally does this slingshot type approach and this Malinga or Thompson type approach, then certainly we should be encouraging them to explore the parameters of that before we then change them into anything other than what they're doing. And really, the thing for me, the first bit is safety. As with all bowling action, that's the first point I go to. As long as they're safe, that's fine. And then the second question, which really relates to this question that we've been asked, is about performance. You know, is there a performance gain to be made from changing from a slingy action to a more conventional action rather than perfect? I'm not going to get into perfect, but a more conventional action. If there is, then fantastic. But my first point of call is always safety first, then performance. And if somebody comes to me with a slingy action and is safe, and they can get it down the other end at a good rate of knots and are having relative success, then I think we master what they've got rather than trying to shift it around too much.
Next question is from Yash. And Yash says, 3 months ago, while I was feeling at cover, I slipped and tore my anterior cruciate ligament. While all this time in bed rest, I've gained a lot of weight and lost my stamina to stay fresh in the game. Please can you suggest me tips to strengthen up and aid weight loss? My cricket season starts in November. I have to lose weight and get back to my best to get selected in the team.
The first thing I think is looking to build things up from a stationary position. So obviously around the knee, the first thing is going to be flexibility and movement. So just trying to extend and bend the knee and trying to get some basic movement back into it and increasing that range of movement over a period of time. Once the movement and that range of movement and flexibility has started to come, then it's obviously a case of trying to develop the strength. So you'd be thinking about introducing either your own body weight if you're capable of doing that, so with a basic stationary squat, or if you're not quite capable of that, you can use an external force and you can either use a resistance band and just do a leg extension pushing away from yourselves, or you can do leg raises or hamstring curls with some sort of light resistance that isn't quite as strong as as weighty as the actual whole body weight. From that, we'll be looking at moving into some basic linear movement. So trying to load that knee with a straight line. Okay, and from there, obviously, we can move into increased speed and then multi-directional movement as well. Before then, we can bring in excess external weights as well to try and increase the load that's been placed on it and increase the force that's been working through the muscles. So one step at a time, start with the very, very basics. Obviously, you'll know, have a good idea of what phase he's at. Even if you think you're partway through, don't jump in at the end. You can spend a very small amount of time doing things that are a little bit easier and you can then catch up. So I'd say go slowly with it. Start with the simple things, though, and then you can gradually branch out into higher speed, increased weight, change of direction and things like that.
I think one of the risks with having a target date to be fit by is that you can put too much pressure on yourself and move too fast, can't you, Gareth? You end up in a worse position.
You can do, and that's where, you know, going back to Sam's original point, is that time scale should be dictated by yourself and also your specialist. You know, it's good to put timescales on things, but equally we have to have flexibility, because at some stage when you come back from an injury like this, it's not always going to go in a linear fashion and you're going to hit every deadline as you go forward. You know, sometimes you might have a bad day, or you might move a bit suddenly, or whatever the case may be. So we do need to be flexible with our timescales, but it's great to have that first one down, isn't it? So you've got something to aim for, but there's no reason why, if everything goes swimmingly, you can't bring that forward. Mm. And equally, if things you get a couple of catches on your knee or whatever the case may be, or you turn a bit quickly one day, that you can put it back a little bit. The crucial thing is that you're talking to the right people, that you're not being overly ambitious, you're not being a slave to your goals, because if you start doing that, then it can lead down a route of becoming disappointed when you don't hit them, and maybe get into a negative mindset around that. It's important that you're flexible enough to be able to keep that positive mindset as you go through your rehab. And then in terms of exercises, to me, with ACLs, it's an opportunity to work other parts of the body whilst you're coming back from that. And you may have gone past this stage, to be honest. You might be in the last throes of your rehab program. But to me, if anybody gets an injury in their lower body, then that's an upper body flexibility, mobility, and stability opportunity. So, shoulders, for example, trying to work rotator cuffs, working core, all of those things become real target areas during that time where your knee is naturally recovering and you're having the physio. It's an opportunity rather than something that seems to be really bad. And in the same way, if somebody does a shoulder, then it's a fantastic opportunity to build up your leg strength and your core strength and your stability that is so crucial in all of the cricket movements that we have.
Michael Boyle, who is a American strength coach, often points out that good ACL recovery training and prevention of ACL injury training is just good training. You know, if you're doing good lower body training, then you're going to improve your chances of getting back from an injury more quickly. Obviously, we're talking about the post rehabilitation period here. When you're in rehab, that's a completely separate thing, and that is the time for the specialist to take advice from the specialist, because they can give you specific advice. But outside of that period, good training methods, pushing, pulling, training, making sure you train the knees, making sure you train the glutes, those are all important areas. And you'll find just coming from bed rest to doing some basic training, even if it's once or twice a week to start with, you're going to find yourself getting fitter very quickly and losing weight quite quickly as well. So that concern about weight loss is a problem.
One thing on that is I've found when I've been injured, I'm sure everyone's found that when they're injured as well, when you're stuck in a chair or stuck in a bed, the one thing you can do is eat a lot, and it becomes very, very easy. So just recovering and restoring a decent diet along the way is going to be a big benefit when it comes to the weight loss, because obviously you're going to increase your strength and your mobility is going to come back, and you're going to start doing some exercise. But if we can attack it from both sides and make sure you're being a little bit more aware of your diet and what's going into your body, as well as what your body's actually physically doing, then we're going to speed up that weight loss, as well as obviously helping with the load bearing on the knee, because the lighter you are, the less stress is going to go through it, and a bit of dietary knowledge and a bit of weight loss will accelerate that as well.
The other thing I wanted to mention was, although the season starts in November, remember that it is a long season. So don't think that you have to be, you know, absolutely in peak physical condition for the very first game of the season. It may be that you are not completely ready for the start of the season, but you are ready enough to start playing. Cricket is a skill-based sport, so if you're not 100% super fit, you could still get away with it to a certain extent, while you're just getting yourself back to absolute peak.
It's all about being realistic, isn't it? You know, and having worked with a physio, and they'll help you to do that. And everybody wants to come back in, you know, November. I see you've written that down for the start of the season, and I'm completely with you, David, because November might be the start of you getting back to hitting balls, but the crucial thing is that you're fit enough to then take that out on the game and to enjoy yourself and as you say, get a peak somewhere towards the mid to late part of the season. But being really specific with your timescales, it will help, and being realistic with them is really important when you do that, because it's very easy, as you said a few minutes ago, David, to set a target that then becomes a bit of a weight around your shoulders rather than something that you're aiming for. Mr. Precision himself is with us to do 60 seconds, nothing more, nothing less. He's got a rant and off he goes.
Optimism is the point I want to make this week, particularly when it comes to approaching your cricket. People tend to either be optimistic in life or pessimistic. Pessimists say that they're just realistic, and they look at optimists out of the corner of their eye and they think they're crazy for looking on the bright side of life all the time. But optimism, I feel, is better than pessimism. And the reason I feel that is not just my opinion. It's been backed by science. I mean, the army teaches soldiers to be optimistic because it makes them tougher and more persistent. Now, when you think about your cricket, do you think that you could benefit from being tougher and more persistent? I'm going to argue yes. So I'm going to say, if you've got the option of looking at something in an optimistic light or a pessimistic stroke realistic light, you might be better off trying to look at things in the positive side. It's going to help you in the long run if you go down that route, and it's going to help you become a better cricketer, and that's what it's all about. Another half an hour in the bag. Before we go, we're going to decide on our winner of this week's competition, which is the online coaching course, courtesy of Pitch Vision Academy at pitchvision.com. So, Gareth, we had the question from Anaf this week about a slinging action and how to convince his coach to maintain it. And we had the question from Yash about recovering from injury. Which one did you prefer this week?
Well, I'd normally go for the slingy bowling action because I love a slingy bowling action. But I'm going to go with Yash's one this time. We don't get a lot of specific injury opportunities to answer questions on. So I'm going to go with Yash, and I wish him all the best in his rehab.
Yes, all the best, Yash. Hopefully the online coaching course will speed things up through optimism. Look at that, linking it all together. Now, I don't know, Gareth, if when you say that you liked one of them, but you're going for the other one, I don't know whether that's a good thing or not. It's almost like you almost won the prize, but you didn't. But here's what you could have won, as they used to say on Bullseye.
Yeah, exactly, a bit of gym, nothing wrong with that.
There's a reference for all our Indian listeners.
Exactly, I love that. I'm sure they can find it on satellite telly somewhere.
Yeah. There must be an Indian version, surely.
There must be.
It'd be brilliant, I'd love to watch that.
You and Bullseye, that'd be fantastic. If it's out there, please send me a link. Please send me the YouTube link. Right, where were we? Oh, yes. So if you want to get in touch with us, you can do so. You can get your question answered. Maybe you'll be that so near but yet so far, here's what you could have won person, or maybe you'll win the prize. Gareth, if someone wanted to get in touch with us, how would they do that?
They could give us a call, mate, on 0203 239 7543 or drop us an email at coach@pitchvision.com.
That's right. And of course, unlike television game shows, you can keep trying every week. You can keep sending your questions to us. There's no limit to the number of questions you can send in. You can also contact us via Twitter. Our Twitter feed is at PitchVisionAcad. And you can find us on Facebook. Facebook.com/PitchVisionAcademy is where we hang out there. You can subscribe to the show in all the major podcast catching programs, including Apple Podcasts, of course, iTunes, Downcast, Overcast, Dogcatcher, whatever else you can think of. But if you want to use the RSS feed instead and use something wild or wonderful to catch your pods, then go to pitchvision.com/academy, click on the podcast link for the RSS feed details. That's all for this week. We hope you listen next week. But until then, have a good week. Cheers, Lavis. Cheers, Gareth.
Cheers, boys.